speaking out on city finances, human rights, and more. Tommy Hazzouri is in studio to talk to listeners right now. Good morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in on this soggy Thursday. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope your commute went okay this morning. Keep listening because just ahead, Councilman Tommy Hazzouri joins the show and takes your calls. Lots to talk about. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, the latest research on breast cancer at the upcoming Pink Ribbon Symposium in Clay County. We'll talk to the founder of that growing event, plus weekend plans from The Spectator, jazz great Boney James, and more. All of that ahead. But first this hour, he's become the voice of the loyal opposition at Jacksonville City Hall. Joining us now in a wide-ranging discussion on everything from the city's budget just passed to what's expected to be a renewed debate over the human rights ordinance and more, we welcome City Councilman and former Mayor Tommy Hazzouri to Studio 5. Councilman, good morning. Thanks
good
for being
here. Good morning to you, Melissa, and good morning, audience. It's good to be here, even though it's rainy and soggy out today.
It sure is, and we appreciate you making your way in today. And what are your questions for Councilman Hazzouri? Give us a call at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page. So the council has finished its first huge task. A $1 billion budget passed pretty much as Mayor Lenny Curry proposed. What are your thoughts about that document now getting the official passage?
I think it's great. I know when I first got on the council, they were talking about how many days and how many nights and how long the budget would be debated the night that it was voted on, which was this past Monday because of the holiday. And happy holiday to all our friends in the Jewish community. We have a balanced budget. We have a good budget. We did everything we were saying we were going to do during the campaign. And you say the loyal opposition. You know, I want Lenny to succeed. He's our mayor. And I want him to succeed because Jacksonville will succeed. We're not going to disagree on too many issues. I didn't get 110,000 votes just from Democrats. I think it went across the board with Republicans and Independents because I try to be moderate on and understand what's good for Jacksonville and move forward. And that's the only way we're going to ever succeed. And there are a lot of issues still ahead in front of us other than the budget. But it was a good budget. It was balanced. Public safety was our big issue, and that was addressed early on in the libraries, which is one of the things that I introduced for adding $1 million to keeping our library, adding additional hours, adding additional days. And then another program that's coming down the road, LEAP, which is has a acronym that stands for Library Enhancement Access Program. It all these acronyms we have, but basically it'll involve the urban core districts of Jacksonville where a lot of those libraries are underutilized, and as a result, we need to have resources from our library system to teach parents to read to their children, how to read to their children, to bring them to the library, and then also to go outside the library system itself and go to the people, like a wellness program. So these are exciting things to do, and I'm looking forward to it. I don't know, you know, as the tax base grows, then hopefully our budget will be better. But we've got a number of issues ahead of us with pension, HRO, and a number of others.
Let's talk about those, and it's 549-2937 to connect with Tommy Hazzouri. As you said, you received more votes in the elections than anyone else on the ballot.
Other than the referendums.
Yeah. You were the most popular name on the ballot. Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I'm very pleased and honored. I had no idea the number of votes. You know, it's a tough election. And when you have a Republican running in your district, well, my district is the whole county. I'm at large. But I don't look at it as Republican. There are no Republican potholes, no Republican or Democratic potholes out there. It's one for all and all for one. If we're going to have one city, one Jacksonville, then that's the way we need to operate. And that kind of brings me into the HRO when that issue comes up, the human rights issue. That ordinance, hopefully the mayor's going to start addressing having public hearings. He said he wanted to have town meetings, and I'm looking forward to that. We're giving him the opportunity to reach out to the community. But I am vehemently supportive of equal rights, only because, and human rights. It's not about, just sex or religion or what have you. It's about everybody being included. And if we can't do that, you know, Tampa passed a law back in 1993, and the city of Tampa, but Hillsborough County, Dade County, Orange County in Orlando, Leon County, all of them have basically the same human rights law, and they've had no issues with it. If we need to tweak it, that's fine. But the thing is, mm-hmm. it's got to be all inclusive and leave no one behind.
Of course, the updated HRO to cover LGBT residents failed by one vote in 2012 in Duval County. There are 19 members on the city council, lots of new faces on the council. You're one of them. You're probably the most vocal supporter of updating the HRO this time around. Do you think the votes are there? And do you think Mayor Curry will use his bully pulpit to push for updating this ordinance?
It's my hope that he will. It's my hope that after he has his town meetings or whatever he wants to do in the next month or so, that he'll see that there's a strong need for it. It's not a Democratic issue. It's not a Republican issue. It's the issue. It's our civil rights of today, quite frankly. And it's not that I'm over here. It's not to me. It's personal from a standpoint of everybody's had some kind of discrimination against them throughout their lives. Most people have. For someone to say that I see no signs of discrimination, then they have their eyes closed. It's a. But more importantly, why would you leave anybody behind in the community? You know, I notice our saying is, you know, Florida, welcome to Florida, or Jacksonville's our first, you know, our first. What is it? What is our slogan now besides one city, one Jacksonville? Where Florida begins, Jacksonville. Well, I don't want it to be a slogan in the end that says where equality ends. I want it to be where inequality ends. And hopefully we can have that.
We'll go to your calls for City Councilman, former Mayor Tommy Hazzouri in a moment at 549-2937. Let's move on and talk about a couple of other things. The pension, you talked about the city's pension situation. Let's get into that. The budget's done. Let's talk pension for a minute. The police and fire pension fund. What are your thoughts?
Well, now each councilman is a liaison for different agencies. I'm a liaison for the Jacksonville Transportation Authority and now the pension fund. So I'm looking forward to my first meeting this Friday, tomorrow, and to see the direction with Bill Shy being on there now. Who I think brings a lot of credibility, having dealt with that issue throughout the past two or three years for former Mayor Brown. We've got a big hole to fill. They passed a very good law. We're going to end up with $5-10 million the next few years to have to come up with, but they need a single source of revenue. And I read in the paper today, I just saw the headlines, but I know it's been going around for quite a bit, and that is that they're looking at a sales tax referendum or to see what the legislature can do. You know, we've got some big problems as far as funding. It's not just the pension. We have the $26 million that we put to indigent care for our hospital here. Mm-hmm. Well, that's totally, you know, that's wholly underfunded. And so we need to find a way that we can start addressing these issues so that we can build our shipyard, that we can build our landing, that we can dredge our port and address some of the environmental issues. And so I'm looking forward to it. It's something I've had background in dealing with these as a legislator and all, and now it's come to fruition with mm-hmm. me on the council to see, you know, where history began, really, mm-hmm. and where we are today with some of these same issues.
Do you think the city will be able to do the dredging project? Can the money be found for that, to dredge the river to accommodate those bigger ships coming through the port?
I think so, if that's the right thing to do. The thing is, you've got to have a balance and not to take, you know, one side or the other. I am for dredge. I think if that helps us, you know, I think what people need to know, and maybe we don't, all of us don't know this, is that you know, Florida has 13 major ports and as many as 16 or 17. Savannah, Brunswick, Charleston, they're state-funded. Savannah's getting ready, I believe it's Savannah, getting ready to dredge to 47 or 50 feet. Well, they got the advantage of state dollars just going in there. They're the only major port there. Brunswick's similar to them. But for us, we're in competition with Tampa, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, a number of communities that mm-hmm. do a good job, mm-hmm. and they're all waiting on the Panama Canal to send those big ships up, and hopefully we'll be able to get some federal help. But most importantly, too, we've got to make sure that the water, the salinity that goes into the water, that it's balanced, that we don't do harm to our St. John's River. That is our most precious treasure. It's our national treasure, and we need to do that at the same time, and I think that we can get to that.
Now, you've said that these issues aren't about Democrat, Republican, or Independent. You did receive votes from everybody in the recent elections, but you are, I think, the most visible and the most popular Democrat in town. As such, what are your thoughts about the flap over the mayor asking people to leave boards and commissions? Some see that as overly partisan, in particular the flap over Democrat Lisa King being asked to leave the city's planning commission. She's refused to resign. That's now she's asking the city council to vote on this. Well, how's that going to play out?
That's one of the issues. Now, you've got 3 weeks before it comes to us because we're off next week. It's the fifth week. So that's one of the few weeks that you see the council just not closed down, but no committee meetings, no council meetings. I discussed this with the mayor. It's pretty transparent to me. And I say this with no malice in mind, but it's obvious when you see there are a couple of Republicans who were taken off. But when you look at a Lisa King or a Nancy Soderbergh, and I don't want to pick and choose each one of them, but it's pretty transparent that they are all Democrats. The mayor hasn't talked to him directly. Some of his people have. And, you know, Lisa King, I mean, just to show you kind of an in-your-face thing, her board, the commission, after that happened, voted her as chairman. And I think that speaks highly. Republicans, Democrats alike, supporting her because they know the job that she can do. I hope that it doesn't continue with this kind of a pattern, because if it does, it's just going to drive a wedge between the city and, yes, Democrats, Republicans. But more importantly, I hear it from other people, too. Republican, why would they do that? I've never seen any mayor remove anyone in the middle of their term. Now, if it was a new position, if it was a new appointee, an open seat, have at it. That's his prerogative, his or her prerogative. They should be able to do whatever they want. He thinks he can do it anyway, and maybe he can. I mean, it's his choice, but, I mean, under the law, apparently. But when you, with the Planning Commission, it takes 10 votes. With the JAA or JIA, the Aviation Authority, no votes were required, I guess, because there's, and the JEA is going to be the same way. If he decides to remove some of them, then,
right. Then the JEA board, issues there. Can she win this fight on the council? And to play devil's advocate, it is a departure for the mayor, but doesn't the mayor have the right to pick and choose who he wants?
He does, but I've never, and I don't think any of the former mayors felt that way either. I never thought that you'd want, unless it's malfeasance or something, that you could remove a person. But the law is so vague that the general counsel said that he can, and that's fine. But the thing is, why would you want to take somebody off in their term if they're going to be the chairman, if they've been there for 2 years? The whole idea of independent agencies is to have independent thoughts, not a Democratic thought, not a Republican thought, but to have an independent thought in making business-like decisions. And that's what it's all about. Otherwise, just have terms of office that coincide with the term of the mayor, and then they all go at one time. Then you have no continuity and no institutional knowledge. So there's, you know, you got pluses and minuses on both sides, but people will say, well, the mayor has that right. And if he does, he does. But the thing is it the right thing to do, and does it violate the spirit of the law?
She's lobbying the council. Can she get the votes to win this showdown with the mayor's office or not?
I can't talk to the council about their votes under sunshine. But, you know, I don't know what 3 weeks is going to do. I don't know how the mayor is going to be lobbying. It's something that's really, you know, his reputation, so to speak, is at risk, too, with this kind of an issue. Is this going to continue? And he has a majority of Republicans on the
right.
Council. And normally I would say that they're not going to win, or that issue, that they'll end up losing it. But who knows? And I'm hoping that there'll be some kind of reasonable approach to it from now on, and not continue to nickel and dime all these agencies, and the transparency and the look of partisanship. You know, he's not the chairman of the Republican Party anymore, and I hope that he takes that hat off. And I know he wants to do a good job for Jacksonville. I really believe that in all my heart. And I know that the council, Democrats and Republicans alike, want to help him. But this doesn't fare very well when it comes to the obvious.
Well, let's go to your calls right now for Councilman Tommy Hazzouri. Lots of calls at 549-2937. Mark is on the west side. Hi, Mark. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Missouri, I always like to call politicians on this show with the same question, and you briefly
politicians.
Touched on it,
don't call me a politician, but I guess I am. Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mark.
How about just Max Guy?
Thank you.
There you go. About something that is of vital importance, probably the number one most important thing for us citizens in Jacksonville, is the dredging, of course, but also even more importantly, is the taking of, potentially taking of 150 million gallons a day of St. John's River water from Orlando. And I know things are happening in the background, but I'm really concerned about this, and I just don't think I see a lot of opposition to this from our leadership.
Do you mean taking the water from from our St. John's up here and sending it to Orlando?
That's correct.
Yes, I am totally opposed to that. And I know some of these decisions are reached. I don't want to dig down into the partisanship of it, but, I don't mind sharing when opportunities are there, because we may need the same kind of thing later. But you can't destroy – it has to be really studied before you do that. I remember Governor Kirk 100 years ago, it seems like, when he was – the governor, he wanted to take water out of the ocean, which may not be a bad idea today, the way they can take salinity out of the ocean,
right,
and put it into Palm Beach. And so, but these are new technologies to do these things. I don't want to drain the St. John's River. I want to take advantage of our national treasure and utilize it to the best of our ability for our economy and for our quality of life here in Jacksonville, North Florida.
And the mayor's gone on record opposing it, too. That so is the St. John's River Keeper.
I think McBurney did, too. The state rep, I saw a headline the other day that he's opposed to that as
well. So we'll have to see how that plays out. Let's go now to Lisa in Orange Park. Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hello.
Good morning, Councilman, and congratulations on your budget.
Thank you very much, and thank you all. I mean, it's your budget, too, even though you live in Orange Park. We're all for one and one for all up here.
Well, I'm a traveling health nurse, and I see quite a few different communities outside of Orange Park. And I was thinking about your proposal to educate parents through the library system.
Yes, ma'am.
And on that note, we live in the country's largest city, and to undertake such a massive education program through a limited resource like the library system is a little disconcerting. And I don't want to just point that out without offering my thought of solution. And what I was thinking is, based on my own experience, I was awarded community health excellence through a program in Miami that I set up using a youth-based program to go into an outreach education in the community where I was working. And I did it through a faith-based organization. So I'm going to leave all – I know those are all very general, broad, sweeping statements, but I think that maybe redirecting type of education programs because of the size of the topography here might be a solution.
You know, thank you for that and for your observation. Let me just say this. You know, I've served on the school board for 8 years, too. I didn't run for these offices because I was looking for a promotion. You don't leave the mayor's office and 10 years later run for the school board. There are needs that I felt that were out there. My wife taught for 43 years. My son's a teacher today. The school system plays a major part in it. All of us do. This is just a small piece. One of the reasons that this came up, to be quite frankly, I wanted to put it in when we were adding library hours and opening additional days, the urban core was one of the first things I thought about. But they weren't the ones that were utilized the most. It was the regional libraries, and then after that, some of the bigger libraries in some of the areas like Mandarin and San Marco and all. But the biggest problem was it wasn't about adding hours to these urban core libraries, because you're still not going to get people going there. We needed to do some things within the library system. They wanted to do it where you can have programs that are non-library locations. We wanted to be able to teach parents how they do. It's the library, not me. These are their thoughts on how they put that package together. So while you're adding hours and days, you're not just adding them, you're doing something about them and bringing kids and parents and businesses to those libraries. So that's just one piece of it. You know, the school system, I think they're having a press conference today with the mayor. They're doing 60,000 library e-cards for all of our kids so they can have library cards and go to the libraries. We're trying to do everything that we possibly can, and faith-based organizations are another part of it. A number of the nonprofits, CIS, Communities and Schools, Jacksonville's Children's Commission, even the Sheriff's Office, all are part of making the success happen for our libraries. The better educated, the matter of fact, the Jacksonville Journey, we didn't mention that in the budget, they had an additional $3 million. It's for at-risk kids, for kids that need help. The journey, to me, begins with education. And if you do that, the reading, which is a foundation of education, then you're having a head start. And I commend you and the faith-based, for suggesting the faith-based groups. A lot of the churches are doing that now, and I thank you for that observation.
John on the South Side. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hey, John.
Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Councilman.
Good morning.
Missouri, and thank you for taking my call. You know, legislation is a dialogue of the community. And, you know, prior to coming on City Council, there was 2014-305, which is docking rules and penalties, and 2014-560, which is the creation of our CRA-DIA, you know, in the 20-square-mile zone for downtown. And Councilman Missouri, you know, you recently, well, and still are, serving on the Blight, which is now the ninth committee. But with the docking rules and penalties, a penalty is the seizure of your watercraft for a violation. With the NICE committee, you, along with three other council members, called one of those snipe signs during the committee meeting and got through where nobody else was able to. And I just want also everyone to know that with docking rules and penalties, I emailed all the council members and only a handful responded, and Kevin Missouri, to his credit, did. And I thank you for that. And in your response to my email, you had indicated that you will reevaluate or hope to reevaluate the policy of the seizure of your watercraft for a violation, especially if we are telling the world to visit downtown, and if you show up, your vessel could be seized. It's like the Uber and Lyft of the waterways, but it's also the snipe sign where that where unexpected, thing can happen.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John. That's the new phrase of the day that I use. I hear Bill Gulliford and others, and I use it now just to remark about how they remark about it, and that's unintended consequences. I said, I've heard that. I heard that in the legislature when they used to say this is unconstitutional. Well, unintended consequences. We can't keep going with that because we need to have intended consequences. And we would have spent forever on those snipe signs.
Right.
And it was getting old. And finally, we did make a decision. Unfortunately, too, or fortunately, the head of that department retired last week, or is getting ready to retire this week. It was a little bit disconcerting to me when I could call the number that one of the constituents had out in the audience, and they answered the phone, and then Reggie Brown, who was sitting next to me, I didn't know he was calling, he called, and they said they could close on that house, houses for sale signs, in 10 days. And I said, here we're making these calls, and y'all are out there with all these people and can't find these people or can't contact them. And that didn't make sense to us.
So you decided to actually call the number.
Well, while I was sitting there, while they were debating it, and I said, let me see if I can get them. And there they answered. As soon as they answered the phone, I got the address, sent them out there. Yeah.
There you go.
Yep.
Your tax dollars at work, right?
Your tax dollars at work.
Joe in Jacksonville. Hi, Joe. Go ahead.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You mentioned the river. A couple of comments.
Yes, sir.
Regarding the withdrawal for Orlando. That's basically smoke and mirrors. Even though I'm not sure, even the regulators recognize that, they want to take river water because the groundwater is all used up.
Right.
The groundwater and the river water are the same water. If you withdraw from the river, it's still going to draw down the aquifer. And that isn't getting acknowledged. It's really not an alternative supply. Also on desalination.
Yes, sir.
Please don't think of it as a silver bullet. It's got some real downsides associated with it. One, it's very energy intensive, so you got the carbon issue. And two, it produces an effluent, extremely salty water, that they don't really know what to do with.
Yeah.
Down in
okay.
Tampa, they're pumping it out in the ocean, and it kills everything.
Thanks, Joe.
That's why I listen to my constituents. I learn more and more. I'm not going to say what Scott said. Governor Scott said, you know, I'm not a scientist. I am not a scientist, but I guarantee I'll listen to this, both sides and try to come up with a reasonable conclusion. Dr. White at JU and others, and because there are issues on both sides and there are solutions on both sides, and sometimes the train doesn't meet.
Ira on the south side. Hey, Ira, thanks for holding. You're on the air.
Thank you. A great show. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Councilman.
Yes, sir.
Councilman, the mayor campaigned as being an expert CPA accountant and promised a forensic audit of the former mayor's administration. With the signing of the budget and the budget news last week, I saw nothing of the results of the mayor's forensic audit. Is there anything to that, and should we be concerned? Thank you.
You know, actually, I don't have an update on it. I know they started before we were elected. They're also doing a forensic audit of the, and I don't think they're one and the same. I think they're two different ones. I don't know if the other one was a forensic audit that the mayor was doing. I know he wanted to go through the budget and see if they could find dollars and cents and see what's available. I know the CIP committee under Lori Boyer did a great job in identifying money that wasn't misappropriated but wasn't spent either and just sitting in different corners of the budget. But the other one is a forensic study that hasn't been concluded, and we're waiting on it, and that's with a pension fund. And we're still mm-hmm. now I think Mike Weinstein is the point person for that, assigned to whomever is the CPA or the firm that's doing that. And hopefully we're going to get some results from that as well to determine how that pension fund, I'm talking about the police and fire pension fund, has been conducted, and if there's any nooks and crannies around there that stand out to all of us.
What do you think about the news that the administrator of the fund, John Keane, is drawing a $400,000 check for his unused vacation time?
It's, you know, John and I go back to our JC days. A lot of people know John. He's a great guy, smart man, but he's been a target now for a number of months, even a couple of years. And, you know, we've stopped. We passed a law, an ordinance that says no more pensions like that. So that's out. So the three that are receiving funds, you know, we just passed an ordinance saying that we're going to take it to court or try to mediate or mitigate the differences in the dollars. Two of them have retired. John is getting ready to retire. I think we're going to get a handle on that. Unfortunately, if it goes to court, we have to pay hundreds of thousands, mm-hmm. of, if not $1 million. Pension fund pays the same thing to defend it. And both of them are taxpayers' dollars, and that's what you want to stop and cut it off. And you know, you got to know when to fold them, and hopefully this is going to end very shortly.
Here's a question on our First Coast Connect Facebook page for Councilman Hazzouri. Do you support a central receiving facility to help people with mental issues and substance abuse problems? There's an effort going on in Jacksonville to get people with those issues out of the jail and into a new facility. You might have heard something about that.
I've heard something about it. I mean, I like the idea of centralizing issues like that. I like the idea of centralizing contracts so it can be transparent, so you can see what we're doing, whether it's for the mentally ill or whether it's for these millions of dollars of contracts that we let out on from the authorities to our own city of Jacksonville contracts. So I think a central location narrows down a lot of that bureaucracy. I am really big time on mental health. I worked as I headed up a committee for former Sheriff Glover for mental health with involving the police officers and how they can address the mentally ill and identify them instead of having to not know whether they're drinking or taking drugs or whatever they're doing. And it was adopted after a Memphis plan with the Memphis Police Department. So I am big time for that and will work my way into trying to get involved in that issue as well.
And a lot of work ahead.
A lot of work ahead. Pensions, I mentioned the shipyards. Also the Skyway. I'm on this committee that's going to be reviewing at long last. What do you do with the Skyway? It's been the little train that couldn't for so long.
Yeah, exactly.
And we need to really decide. And there are four options. He's got the JTA's appointed an 18-member committee. I'm on the Transportation Utility Energy Committee or Energy Utility Committee, and we'll have a presentation of this $340,000 study that the JTA did on the Skyway. We either need to move it or lose it, one way or the other. Either, you know, we're going to discuss all that. It's very expensive to continue. Do you repurpose it to a high line or a park above it with, you know, with bicycles and pedestrian in a park like New York has in Chicago? Do you do light rail, which can't be extended from that? The ideal thing now is to move it to Brooklyn. That's the last resort for moving that train the way it is to where they're developing in the Riverside area. So there's a lot of good things coming forward. And, you know, I've only been on 3 months.
And a lot more coming down the pike. Hopefully we'll talk about it again soon in a few more months. In the meantime, thanks for being here.
Melissa, thank you, audience. I really enjoyed the questions and always on the Melissa Ross Show.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Councilman Tommy Hazzuri here today. Much more still ahead later, The Spectator. But up next, a look ahead to the Pink Ribbon Symposium. We're back in a moment.
Legal and political segments on First Coast Connect, brought to you by Farrah and Farrah.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
On the next Jazz Night in America.
Tonight we celebrate one of our own, the one, the only Joe Temperley.
The Jazz and Lincoln Center Orchestra salutes their baritone saxophonist of 26 years.
My legacy is just to play as well as you can and to enjoy your music, that's all.
This is going
to
be something unforgettable.
I'm Christian McBride. That's this week on Jazz Night in America.
Saturday nights at 8 on 89.9 WJCT.
Relax Radio is the great American songbook, oldies and light jazz.
It's the radio station I was always looking for and never found until now.
Harry Moonbeam's home in a jar.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
Welcome back. Well, next month, our First Coast Connect Book Club will discuss writer David McCullough's latest biography, exploring the life of the Wright brothers. And we want your thoughts. Be part of our book club. You can check out copies of the book for free at the public library or buy it at Chamberlain's or the Bookmine. There are partners in our book club. Now, while you read the book, here's what we want you to do. Think about your first flight. Was it good or bad? What are your thoughts and memories? Send them to bookclub@wjct.org. Well, a big event is coming up in Orange Park, bringing together patients, doctors, and researchers, sharing advances in the treatment of breast cancer. The Pink Ribbon Symposium is a major health event. We've got a preview right now with one of the founders, Dr. Linda Sylvester, and it's such a pleasure to see you. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. This is coming up Saturday, October 3rd at the Thrasher Horn Center in Orange Park. Such an important event when it comes to Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Yes. We originally started Pink Ribbon Symposium to empower women about breast cancer, their treatment, and it has evolved over the years to just talking about side effects, survivorship, and our attendees have asked us include lifestyle and health and wellness issues. So not only is it become a symposium about breast cancer and the latest in treatment and radiation and surgery, but it's also about a health and wellness.
It's all about health and issue. Wellness and helping and support for caregivers too, right?
Yes, very much so. In fact, this year, our guest speaker is Mark Hyacin, and he is founder of Men Against Breast Cancer. His mom had breast cancer, and he would say things to her that he thought was being meaning well, and she would interpret it very differently. So he has developed a national workshops where he goes around teaching men how to support women through cancer and breast cancer in particular. And so we're asking the men in women's lives to come and to listen to Mark and just share. Yeah. The night before Haven Hospice, we'll be having a workshop that Mark will be hosting on a blueprint for men as caregivers in general. That's from 5 to 7 at Haven Hospice in Orange Park.
It's so important for spouses, for men to support wives and girlfriends going through this. They shouldn't be put off by the color pink, right?
Not at all.
No, don't be put off. Men, please be part of this. Now, the title sponsor of this program, Baptist Health, is also the sponsor of the Pink Ribbon Symposium. Now, this is happening Saturday, October 3rd at the Thrasher Horn Center in Orange Park. This is a wide-ranging event, and it's such an uplifting event for women and families who have been touched by this disease, Doctor.
Yes, we have people and exhibitors. We have over 70 exhibitors. One of them is Force, Facing Our Risk, Empowered, people who have a family history of breast cancer, ovarian cancer, pancreatic cancers, and we have people and exhibitors talking about complementary and alternative health, attacking depression, just weight management, exercise. A major event.
Now, can people show up the morning of, or do they need to register right now?
We'd prefer people to register, and they can by going to pinkribbonsymposium.org and registering online. We are also offering CMEs and CEUs for healthcare professionals, and they can also register and just come the day of event.
And, you know, every time I see you, Doctor, you're wearing pink.
Yes, I am.
You are a brand ambassador for the Pink Ribbon Symposium in every way.
And so, blue this year, too, because inviting the men.
Yeah,
right?
So so this is for everybody, men and women. So if your life has been touched in any way, you need to come to the Pink Ribbon Symposium. It's Saturday, October 3rd, from 8 to 1 at the Thrasher Horn Center in Orange Park, as Doctor said, pinkribbonsymposium.org to register. Thanks for being here today.
And thank you very much, Melissa.
And up next, The Spectator.
When you think Domino's Pizza, you think pizza. Fair enough, but try Tech Giant, too.
We believe by transaction counts that we are in the top five of e-commerce companies in the world.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the pizza emoji, and the rest of the day's business news next time on Marketplace from APN. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
If you love All Things Considered, consider joining us a few hours early for Afternoons on WJCT. The Takeaway offers a fresh way to look at the news, featuring critical conversations, reports from the field, and listener participation. That's followed by The World, with engaging voices to illuminate what's going on around the globe and why it matters to you. It's the smart way to spend your afternoons. Weekdays from 2 to 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Comic Jim Gaffigan is preparing to perform this weekend for over a million people at the Festival of Families with Pope Francis in Philadelphia. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Gaffigan about how he's preparing, how Catholicism figures into his comedy, and about his TV series in which he plays a comic named Jim Gaffigan, who, like the real Gaffigan, has five children. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Well, plein air, or painting in the open air, is all about capturing the beauty, lighting, and atmosphere of a natural landscape. The First Coast Plein Air Painters Group is having its inaugural exhibition and sale of its beautiful work. Now, this kicks off today. President Randy Pitts is here to tell us about it, and he brought some of his gorgeous paintings with him to the studio. Randy, it's so good to see you, and I love your work. These are beautiful paintings. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so tell us about plein air painting. This is basically just painting outside.
It's basically painting outside. It was something that started many, many years ago, obviously. Artists have been painting for centuries outdoors, but it really sort of became the very recognized when the Impressionists came on, and in the mid-19th century and
right.
heading into the early 20th century. It's now a movement that has exploded across the country. It's an extremely popular thing.
Sure. And what's it like for you? How does it inform your work when you're sitting out in nature, you're painting a scene? What's that like for you spiritually, artistically?
Well, I think it's definitely a reconnection with nature. You know, I think our lives get into such a situation where we're professionally or even socially where we're indoors all the time. I think one of the reasons why plein air painting has become so popular nationally again is, frankly, just because of the fact that it allows us to get outdoors and reconnect with the natural world.
Mm-hmm.
And it also offers many, many challenges to try to capture the landscape because light is fleeting.
Yeah.
The sun moves rapidly across the sky, so you have to really be able to plan what you're going to do and capture it as quickly as possible.
And when you capture it in a beautiful moment in nature in a painting, what a feeling of accomplishment.
Definitely.
Yeah.
It is. And, you know, I think it's something that it's definitely spiritually rewarding.
Absolutely. And it's rewarding to just look at, I can feel my blood pressure dropping just looking at your painting right now.
Well, thank you so much.
And so not only will your work be on exhibit, but the First Coast Plein Air Painters Group is having its inaugural exhibition and sale. This kicks off beginning tonight. Tell us about it.
This evening we have our show opening reception, and our reception is going to be from 6 to 8, and it's going to be at Daryl Bunn's Studios, which is at 643 Edison Avenue. And Edison Avenue is just off of Riverside, mm-hmm. very close to the new Unity Plaza.
Oh, very nice. Great location. And so the exhibition is free tonight, kicking off at 6 o'clock. People can come and see the work of the First Coast Plein Air Painters. But the exhibition runs for a while. So
it runs for a week.
Yeah.
And so, if anybody would like to go see it during the middle of the week, they can call the studio and make arrangements to go over and see it.
That's right. It's the First Coast Plein Air Painters inaugural exhibition and sale. This is a free event tonight, kicking off at 6 o'clock at the Daryl Bunn Studios. That's at 643 Edison Avenue, right off Riverside near the new Unity Plaza. Gorgeous artwork. It's plein air painting, and it's very beautiful. So get out and support our local artist community. Thanks so much, Randy, for being with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, and thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, again, that event is tonight, so get on out and enjoy that. And finally, this hour, lots of choices coming up for your weekend. From REO Speedwagon to the Clean Water Music Fest to Whoopi Goldberg. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of Maven, the Maven of Mirth, the multiple Best of Jacks award-winning Carrie Speckman here
Yay.
Today. Now, wait a minute. It seems that you have won 10,000 awards from Folio Weekly.
Just three,
okay.
And I think two of them probably aren't compliments.
Why is that,
my dear? Best local weirdo.
You see that as a backhanded compliment?
When you see who the other finalists were,
yes. Now, listen, I worked in public relations.
Yes, and congratulations to you.
Thank you,
Melissa
Ross.
Thank you.
Now, as we know, all press is good press.
Yes, exactly.
That is the golden rule.
And if you look up weird in the dictionary, it's really not.
Keep Austin weird. That's the city's slogan.
We had a Make Jack's Weird.
Make Jack's Weird.
We had one. I don't know.
Weird is good.
Oh, I have no problem being weird. And then the other one was Social Media Addict, which
well,
so
that's
I'm a
weirdo thing.
Addict, though.
Yeah, but
that's a nice way of saying get a life. I should call it the Get a Life Award.
Well, you have a life. You have a life telling the world about fun things to do.
What a nice segue.
Yeah.
I just wanted to read Ain't Nobody as Fabulous on the Radio as WJCT's Melissa Ross of First Coast Connect.
I paid them to say that.
No, you didn't.
I slid them a couple of 50s.
Whatever.
Yeah. And they, you know, they're a little cash poor over there, so it worked out nicely.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, perfect. Let's talk about this weekend's events.
Let's talk about it.
All right. Thursday through Saturday at the Comedy Zone, it's Josh Rabinowitz.
Yes. He was named by Comedy Central as a comic to watch.
And he's actually coming up. So, yeah, and Comedy Zone always has great acts.
Yeah,
so.
And he's on True TV's Friends of the People.
Yeah, so that's Thursday through Saturday.
Correct.
Also kicking off today, this is not just for your grandma. It's Quilt Fest at the Prime
and
Osborne.
And what's interesting is it's Beatles, a Beatles theme, like Beatles the band, not Beatles the insects.
Really?
Yeah.
How do they do that?
I guess they make quilts that look like John Lennon.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right.
But anyway, it's, you know, if you like anything to do with quilting, they have they will be displaying a 450. They sell supplies. They have a kids quilting center. They have awards. It's a juried quilt.
Yeah, it's a serious event. And that is today through Saturday at the Prime Osborne.
That is correct.
Now, you tweeted Councilman Tommy Hazzouri earlier asking him if he would, in fact, be attending REO Speedwagon tonight at the Florida Theater.
Not that I think he's a fan, but he just said ask
you never
question.
Know. You never know. You asked, yeah, you want, we wanted questions. So
and
that's
you got a question.
That's what you asked him.
Yes.
REO Speedwagon tonight.
Let's see what song. I knew he was going to play this. Than I ever thought I might. I was hoping he would play like but that's his most popular song. And I can't fight this feeling anymore. Also, side note, I used to have the sheet music for this, and I used to be able to play it on the piano.
Did you write an essay about
no,
that in high school you did Loverboy?
No. This is a totally
Did you
different...
get an A on it like you did your essay on Loverboy?
And throw away the old for it. If you don't turn it off, I'm going to keep singing. You're probably
yeah,
doing
that. No, I'm actually enjoying this.
I already warned
immensely.
People. I already warned people on Twitter I was going to sing.
That's tonight.
What I thought, but...
You know, that's
yes,
that's tonight at the Florida Theater. Now, speaking of the Florida Theater, the night after REO, it's Boney James.
Yes.
Okay, now
let me guess. You have an interview with him.
I did.
All queued up.
It's all queued up. I spoke with the great jazz artist, Boney James.
Why didn't you speak to REO Speedwagon?
Well, just because I knew you would get the chance to sing about them. So listen to this.
I'm just so excited and proud of this record. You know, it's spent so far 11 weeks at number one on the Billboard Contemporary Jazz Chart, which is a new record for me, which is always great when people are digging the music. And I really loved the record when I turned it in. It's inspired by music I grew up loving, you know, sort of retro soul music. It's all original songs, and I'm trying to bring sort of modern production elements into it to make a new hybrid sound.
That's Boney James tomorrow at the Florida Theater, the jazz artist.
Not tonight.
Not tonight.
Of course, that's when REO Speedwagon will be.
Yeah, they got to turn that stage over pretty darn fast.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and speaking of music, Saturday, it's the Clean Water Music Festival, founded by the local duo. They're cute as a button.
Oh, my God.
Flagship
they be
romance.
Any more awesome and talented.
They are the greatest. Yeah, they are the cutest couple.
Jordan Jackson
couple.
Fisher and Sean Fisher, they just got married.
Yes.
They have raised more than $90,000 for Charity Water. Since 2012.
Right.
But they'll be playing Dalton Sear, who I know has been a guest on the show, Spice and the Po' Boys, Canary in the Coal Mine, The Bambi Easy, and of course, Flagship Romance. They have probably the best silent auction I've ever seen.
Really?
Like tons of stuff and really, really cool stuff.
Are they doing this out in Ponte Vedra again?
Ponte Vedra
Concert Hall.
Correct.
Great. Okay, that's Saturday. The Clean Water Music Fest. They're coming, I think they're doing the show Friday, actually.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah, so.
Please give them my best regards.
I will do so. Now, the Florida Theater is really they've got everybody this week.
Whoopi
Goldberg's coming to the Florida Theater Saturday.
She is. She will, you know, she's one of only a handful, actually it's 12, so I guess it would be two handful, of an EGOT. She's an EGOT.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew Rita Moreno was.
That's the only one
I can ever think of.
I thought
have won an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony.
Yes. And I thought she's the only one I could think of, too.
Whoopi is an EGOT. Whoopi. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, she's
You're
doing...
You're welcome.
Thank you, Spectator. Of course you would know that.
Of course I would.
Now, she'll be doing her one-woman show at Florida Theater Saturday night. I bet that's a great show, actually.
Probably
yeah,
is. I would imagine.
Whoopi's an interesting performer.
Yes.
So
hence the EGOT.
Yeah, exactly. Saturday, the Armada play the Tampa Bay Rowdies in the Sports Complex. Sunday, it's Bonnabrew. Let's talk a little bit.
Well, wait a minute. It's the event formerly known as Bonnabrew.
Oh, they've changed
the
name?
It's now Folio Fest.
Okay, it's Folio Fest.
I don't know why. I suspect maybe there were some copyright issues or something.
Folio Fest is a free festival at Five Points Alewife Craft Beer Bottle Shop and Tasting. That's where is it? It's in Five Points.
It's under the bridge.
Oh, it's under the bridge.
Where you may find Ram on Saturday.
Got it. Okay.
Well, you will find Ram.
This is a free event, music, art, comedy, beer festival under the Fuller Warren Bridge, Sunday afternoon.
It's free.
It's free. And this supports the St. John's Riverkeeper.
Correct. So, they have dragon boats. It's kind of like Bonnaroo, like that festival kind of all kinds of stuff going on.
Brew. Okay. And it's called Folio Fest.
Correct.
Also Sunday, it's banned in Hemming Park. I'm one of the people they've asked to come read from banned books.
I had a feeling you might be. What book are you going to tell?
I don't know yet. I don't know yet.
Well, I'm judging the costume contest.
Of course you are.
Of course I am.
I'll see you there.
I've been told I look like a Lorax, a tree from the Lorax.
Oh my gosh, you do. I never would have guessed. I never would have put that together, but that's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on your 10,000 wins.
Congrats on your 10,000 wins.
She's Carrie Speckman, everybody.
She's Melissa Ross. Yay.
Then check out this weekend's events at thespectator.com. Whatever you do, enjoy it. Get out and enjoy the First Coast. And that's our program. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. Diane Reams up next. We'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. You're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.